gun violence in America. Going back through the archives, we've addressed this issue so many times and in so many different ways, it was nearly impossible to decide which segments to replay on this week's show. But in 2010, Dr. Julie Ingersoll was with us talking about an article she'd published in Religion Dispatches magazine, along with journalist Sarah Posner, headlined Gun Ownership, An Obligation to God. The insights Dr. Ingersoll brought to that conversation are well worth revisiting today because they go a long way toward helping us understand why opposition to common sense gun control laws remains so entrenched and in suggesting what it will really take for change to happen.
While constitutional scholars and historians still don't agree on what the curiously worded Second Amendment actually decrees, for some, it has become an article of faith that it gives the right to own, use, and openly carry firearms in city and country and private residence and places of public gathering. And guns can be central not just to national identity, but to religious identity as well. Today, we welcome back to State of Belief Julie Ingersoll, who recently co-wrote an article for Religion Dispatches entitled Gun Ownership, An Obligation to God. She and Sarah Posner wrote that piece together. Julie is coordinator and a professor in the Religious Studies program at the University of North Florida. She's a frequent contributor to Religion Dispatches. Julie, welcome back to State of Belief.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
In your story, you quote Gun Owners of America Executive Director Larry Pratt as saying, when we're talking about firearms, we're not really talking about a right, but an obligation as creatures of God to protect the life that was given them. Now, I may be wrong, but it seems to me that makes gun use sound more like a religious obligation than a legal right. Do I get it correctly?
Well, I think that they see the protection of themselves, their families, as a moral obligation, a biblical obligation given by God. And when they say protection, they mean from criminals, but they also mean from a tyrannical government. And I think as they see it, the possession of firearms is one very natural way to ensure that they're prepared to meet that obligation.
Where do they get the scriptural inspiration for that notion of religious obligation for gun use?
Well, the folks that Sarah and I wrote about are really relatively sophisticated thinkers. They aren't just going and finding some reference to a weapon. Broadly speaking, they think that God has ordained men to be leaders and protectors of their families, and that the tools that are available that allow men to meet that obligation are tools that men legitimately ought to have. In the essay that Sarah and I wrote, there's a quote there from an essay written by a Reconstructionist, Joel McDermott, mm-hmm. In which he actually does list a series of biblical citations in the Hebrew Bible Old Testament in which practice of self-defense is lauded. Mm-hmm. The inability to defend oneself is indicated as slavery. Several different passages that appear in that essay.
In your story, Herb Titus, a lawyer for Gun Owners of America, says the Second Amendment isn't solely about firepower. You have to see it in its spiritual and providential perspective. Help us understand what he's meaning there.
Well, and I think this is something I wanted to clarify. Your initial introduction, you talked about the Constitution giving this right, and mm-hmm. in fact, that's not how they see it. It's very important to them that they construe this right in the Constitution as recognizing a right that already exists and codifying and protecting such a right. But the right, in their view, comes from God. And again, it's related to this obligation to protect those that they're obligated to protect.
I see.
If the government limits their right to own guns, it makes it impossible for them to obey God.
Do you know, would they see other civil rights in the same manner as this one?
Well, they do. I think that one thing that's not often understood is that they really do read the Constitution in the context of the Declaration of Independence. They almost always talk about those two documents together. And so before you have a Constitution, you have inalienable rights endowed by a creator.
I see.
Rights that are self-evident, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So the Constitution is seen as articulating and protecting those certain rights that came from God, and that's clear if you look at those two documents together, right, rather than the way most of us look at the Constitution as a document that stands on its own.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to them because the Constitution, obviously, in the Constitution, the founders decided not to mention the name of God or even a reference mm-hmm. to deity, and so they need that for that kind of authority.
Exactly. The only references in the Constitution to religion are limited.
Are limiting, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for the gun advocates in your article, the ability to resist tyranny is a critical part of their interpretation of the Second Amendment. Now, does that also have a religious component for them?
Oh, absolutely. You see in the essay that Sarah and I wrote, hints at this division between the Gun Owners of America and the National Rifle Association. And you would think that those two groups would be on the same page, and of course, often they are. But Gun Owners is pretty explicit, claiming the mantle of a truly Christian gun protection organization. And, in fact, that has to do with their, first of all, concern that National Rifle Association compromises in places that gun owners would not, but also because Gun Owners of America defends the right to bear firearms in large measure in terms of interest in sporting events and, mm-hmm. and hunting and things like that. Whereas Gun Owners is much more concerned with issues of government tyranny and the right of an individual to protect himself from the intrusion of government.
Well, it's also, interestingly, fits in with the Elena Kagan's confirmation hearings that have just concluded. There she was asked by Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, if the Second Amendment codified a pre-existing right or if it was a right created by the Constitution. You've already talked about the way they see that. Tell us how Titus reacted to Kagan's response.
Grassley, of course, asked where the right comes from, mm-hmm. kind of like you did at the beginning of the interview. Mm-hmm. And Kagan's response was she hadn't really thought about it that way. And Titus was appalled that somebody sitting for a nomination at the Supreme Court would not have thought about that as a question. Mm-hmm. And, of course, for Kagan, that's not unlike asking, you know, whether the rights come from the Constitution or from Zeus. Mm-hmm. Right? That's not her worldview.
Right. Right.
But I think that question by Grassley is a really important one, and I think it slid by without a lot of comment in the media and in the reporting about the hearings themselves, because I think that encapsulates this whole division over whether America is a Christian nation and what the founders really meant. And all of those issues are kind of wrapped up in that question, right? Where do these rights come from?
And I think a lot of people don't see that. That's really an important point you're making. And I think, too, Julie, that if you make that point that these rights are more basic than the Constitution and that they come from God, that means that the government authority is inferior to the authority of God, which opens the door to a very different view of government.
Well, different from whom? I think it is an important division. I mean, Martin Luther King made the same division, didn't
right.
he? Violating civil law in favor of higher law is a perfectly legitimate thing to do. So mm-hmm. it sort of depends on where you go with it.
Sure. Well, in addition to Herb Titus's legal work with Gun Owners of America, in 2004, Titus helped draft what was called the Constitution Restoration Act for Congress. This bill would have prevented federal courts from hearing any case concerning a government entity or official's acknowledgement of God as the sovereign source of law, liberty, or government. And it would also prohibit any federal judge from drawing upon international law in rendering a constitutional decision. The bill had 9 co-sponsors in the Senate, 50 in the House, including now Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, about whom I'm going to talk a little later in today's show, and Representative Mike Pence, who's thought to be considering a 2012 presidential run. So this is not inconsequential. And it shows, I think, that Herb Titus and his thought are not exactly marginal, that they're being embraced by leading members of both parties.
Well, absolutely. And, of course, that proposed legislation that you're referring to arose out of this controversy with Judge Moore in Alabama, for the monument to the Ten Commandments in the middle of the courthouse, and the Supreme Court's ruling that that was unconstitutional. So, these controversies are not marginal.
Mm-hmm.
They play very central roles in our political discourse.
From the summer of 2010, that's Dr. Julie Ingersoll on State of Belief Radio.